Welcome to the Everything Podcast, the place for everything education. Whether you're a first-year teacher or a seasoned educator, our mission is to help you employ smart strategies in and out of the classroom.
We firmly believe that teacher burnout isn't inevitable. Part inspiration and part implementation, we discuss the why and how to make your classroom effective and sustainable.
We're your hosts, Danielle
and Nicole.
Welcome back to another episode of the Everything Podcast. We are so excited that you're here and even more excited to welcome our very special guest of the day, Marshall Escamilla. Many edupreneurs find themselves creating classroom resources to sell to other time-strapped educators, right? We know that life. But Marshall and his wife, Lindsay, decided to start a podcast, not for their fellow teachers or teacher side hustlers, but in an area where they saw real lack. Inspiring science education content. Combining Lindsay's background in science journalism with Marshall's passion for teaching middle school and his musical talent, the couple started Tumble, a self-described science podcast for kids to be enjoyed by the entire family. In today's episode, Marshall explains the process for creating each episode, how they gained the attention of brands early, and how they've recently leveraged this into a brand partnership. What role Patreon plays in his business, and what he's learned to do that you can apply to your very own content creation account, and the invaluable role networking has played in the success of the podcast every step of the way. Let's welcome Marshall to our show.
All right. We are joined by Marshall of Tumble Science Podcast. Welcome, Marshall.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited to talk with you today. Not just about all the wonderful things that you have done and are continuing to do on your podcast, your new course, also a peek into what it's like to be a podcaster for 5+ years at this point, doing a whole lot in that industry. We have so many questions, so much to talk to you about, and we're chatting from you from across the world, actually.
Yeah. I'm here in Barcelona, Spain.
And we'd love to get a quick bio about you and how you made this transition into the podcast space. But maybe even before that, we could talk about your many years as a music educator from all the way from Austin, Texas. There's so much to unpack here. And especially we have to give a major shout out to our friend Tom Gibson of Gibson Education for making this connection for us and connecting us all the way to Spain. So thank you for that, Tom.
Yeah. Thanks, Tom. Still doing good from across the pond.
So would you mind sharing a bit about your experience as a music educator and how you kind of made this foray into podcasting and how the two collide and all
yeah.
And I've checked out your Spotify. There's a lot
really?
Going on. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Hopefully you liked it.
I really did.
Really? Oh, good. Cool. Well, that's okay. You're the first person who said that to me in like a year and a half. So that's cool.
very soothing, calming music, and also just beautiful. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, well, thanks. So yeah, find me on Spotify, Marshall Escamilla. Got a bunch of tracks up there. We can talk about those at some point if you like as well.
I
don't know how deep you want me to go in my personal history, but I was actually hired at the school that is now called the Headwaters School. It wasn't called that when I started. When I was 23 years old as the math teacher at the school. And they, you know, it was the kind of thing where they were just super desperate because they were hiring in August for the new school year. So they hired a 23-year-old who didn't know what he was doing. And so I taught math there for a couple of years. And the school was small enough at that point that every full-time staff needed to have an elective class that they taught as well. So you just needed to say like, oh, here are some electives I could do. And I happened to have a music minor along with my math education from undergraduate. And so I was like, well, I'd love to teach music. And then gradually that program grew until it became my full-time job over the course of, you know, a good long time. And it turned out, you know, I mean, Austin's like, it's a huge music town, right? Like everybody is in a band, everybody sees bands all the time. It's a huge music town. But you know, Texas music education culture is very, let's see, how do I want to put this without like knocking anybody? Because people do excellent work, but it's very band focused. band, orchestra, choir, that's it, yasta. And then there were a lot of kids who just didn't fit in that mold and who were really talented and really, really dedicated to music, but you know, they just weren't going to be band kids and they weren't going to be orchestra kids and they weren't going to be choir kids. And so then they would come to me and I had this sort of alternative program that just became really successful because there wasn't something else like that in Austin. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the story of my career as a music educator. And that gets you to 2017 where we sort of got an opportunity to take a sabbatical and move abroad.
And for people who are listening, they might be thinking to themselves, I thought you said Tumble Science is what he runs. Can you explain that connection to us? How do we get from music education over here?
Yeah, well, so let's see. So my partner, wife, Lindsay, is a science journalist, and she actually got her start working for Earth and Sky, which is a science radio show. It's, you know, it's like 30 years old. So she was one of their reporters for a little while, and she, in that experience, she got really passionate about science. And like that was actually sort of her first education into what science actually is, because she'd sort of spent her whole life thinking a science is memorizing the periodic table and taking a test about it, and the people who are good at that become scientists, and the rest of us, you know, figure out what we're going to do with our lives. And it was when she was working for Earth Sky and interviewing scientists every day about what their actual work was that she really learned that that's not at all what science is. And in fact, it's, you know, really just a process by which curious people can answer questions they have about the world. So, you know, she really spent a lot of time in science journalism, covering the science beat. And when we had a kid in 2014, when our first son, Emmett, was born, there was sort of, I think she kind of had a revelation that she wanted to pursue making a science podcast for kids, because there wasn't much out there at that time. I mean, there was one other podcast for kids that was, you know, really prominent. It was Brains On. And then maybe a couple of other fiction podcasts at the time. But really, in terms of educational podcasts for kids, not much at all. So she was kind of in a position where she knew the industry well, and she knew her stuff, and she knew she could do it. And she invited me to be the co-host, and I kind of couldn't say no because we were married, and I didn't want to risk other aspects of that. And it turned out to be really enjoyable. And, you know, I started making the music for the show, and then that became kind of a fun thing for me in itself. And I don't know if I'm rambling at this point, but.
You know, you mentioned how your wife, Lindsay, came to the realization of like what science actually is. And I tuned in and listened to episodes because I want to know exactly what all of this, what Tumble Science has to offer. And the very first episode that I click on, it starts with two different children sharing their question about the subject and what they think is the answer to their question. And I loved that format so much because it really kind of takes you on the same journey that Lindsay went on, right? It's not memorizing facts. It's that feeling of being inquisitive. Can you talk a little bit more about the format of your show?
Yeah, well, so there's one piece you're missing of what we ask our kids to do, which is, so those two that you did mention, but also we usually ask them to speculate how scientists might find out.
Yes. The answer. I'm sorry. That's exactly right. Yep.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know, it's just wild what they say. It's usually funny.
How cool they are, which makes that make more sense.
Yeah. But like occasionally, you know, you'll ask like 10 7-year-olds like some question. and or they'll have a question and then they'll guess what the answer is, and then they'll say what scientists find out, and the scientists will be like, wow, yeah, that's exactly what we do. I mean, not, you know, in broad strokes, you know, they're leaving out all the details of like building the robot or whatever, but
it teaches them to have the right instincts about it, right? That they know how to solve these things. They know how to engage in the scientific process. And right on your website, it says it's a science podcast for kids to be enjoyed by the entire family.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you get that, right? So how is it that you cater to both of these audiences? You make sure it's enjoyable for the kids, but also it's something that, you know, the parents want the kids to be listening to.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hopefully they do.
I think so.
There's always, you know, every time, like, I mean, I'm sure you'll see this when your kids get a little older, but like you know, every kid has that one thing that they're super into that they listen to 1,000 times, and the parents are like, God, this again. And believe it or not, and you, my son went through a Bruce Springsteen phase relatively recently, where he wanted to listen to nothing but Born in the USA, the record, from start to finish, over and over again, 7 times a day. So like, you know, I got to the point where it was like, not the boss, please. Can we listen? How about another album by Bruce Springsteen? It's that one. So I'm sure there's someone for whom I'm that, right? Where they're just like, please not Marshall again, please. But anyway, I'll set that aside. To answer your question directly, you know, when I teach, and my favorite age to teach is really the 4th to 7th grade mm-hmm. age, because I just feel like kids that age they're just so fun, and they're also so clever. Like, they've really developed the ability to speak on an adult level for the most part, mm-hmm. but they aren't cynical yet, you know, and it's really like, from the very start, we were like, I want to talk to 4th graders. We're going to talk to 4th graders, and we're going to talk on their level. And if you can talk to a 4th grader, you can talk to anybody.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. They say most things are written at a 5th grade reading level. So I think that tracks.
Yeah.
Now, how did you guys, it sounds like right out of the gate, you guys got a lot of leverage. You won Best of iTunes for 2016. How did you kind of get the momentum from the very beginning as a podcast?
Sure. Well, so this is like, I mentioned earlier that like at the time there wasn't a lot out there for kids. And just that by itself gave us a lot of push, because it became really clear early on that this was something that parents were looking for. And there was a lot of word of mouth energy that kind of built our audience. I mean, really, we still haven't really marketed much beyond the occasional, what do they call those things? Where you trade on someone else's feed, right?
Like a takeover?
Oh, they don't call them that. or at least they haven't been called that to me. Anyway, but something like that, where you basically broadcast your show on someone else's feed. When we're done, I'm going to remember what that's called, and I'm going to angrily email you. But
also, Marshall says this all humbly. If you are on their homepage, as featured in Wired, The New York Times, The Atlantic, Fatherly, like the...
I mean, there was a lot. There was a lot of word of mouth early on. And then I think another key, and I feel like, you know, when I listen to you guys' other episodes, I feel like you've talked about the importance of networking, and that was another key component, is that, you know, particularly Lindsay being sort of in the journalism world and like knowing who to talk to and all that, that really got us a lot of our early press. That and, you know, I mean, again, like podcasting for kids just kind of wasn't a thing until we were in it. And then, you know, just being an early adopter, I think, is another really profound benefit. There was there were many articles like for the New York Times where they're like, what are five podcasts for kids? And at that point there were five. So
you're far too humble, because if anyone has taken the, I'm sure we have people listening today that are longtime fans, and we certainly hope to bring over a few more in the process, but there's so much work that goes into each of these episodes. And I think you even have a stat on your website, something along the lines of 20 hours of work goes into a single episode. Not only are you featuring kids, you're featuring scientists, you're creating original score for the podcast. Mm-hmm. There's heart and soul that goes into this. And it's so apparent to anyone who's tuning in. And I'd love to talk about the actual creation of each of the episodes, because it's sure. so deliberate. Of course, each of the titles is even more eye-catching than the next. You know, you're just scrolling through and like some, you know, just so many of these pop out at you. Decoding dog DNA, right? The science of snot, all of these, right? They're very engaging, of course, at first glance, but then you really see there's actual experts tuning in, speaking on each of these topics in a way that's extremely accessible to kids, to families. And you're providing this in a storytelling kind of format. And I think mm-hmm. that is, of course, meant to accommodate the young listener, which you do a beautiful job of. But I'd love to kind of give even more context as to what goes into making a podcast episode, because it is so worth a listen. Danielle and I were just chatting before about how much we're just absolutely enjoying every piece of it. So definitely give us a clear view into what goes into making one and what a typical episode is like.
Okay. Well, so, I mean, it all begins with, we have sort of like a brainstorm board with lots of different topics, and there's like lists of people we want to talk to. But then also, especially since we've had listeners for a while, one of the things that our listeners do is they send us questions. So we have a big bank of all the questions that people send us. The most recent one is, why do beans make you fart?
Valid question.
Yeah, it's a great question. And so we've got this big list. And at one point we went into classrooms with, I would say like we took 5 or 10 trips into classrooms in the early days, where we would just record kids and say, what questions do you have about science? And typically we'd have sort of like, okay, we know we can interview these people. Mm-hmm. And so this person knows about volcanoes. Do you wonder anything about volcanoes? Let's find out. And then usually we get some cool questions that way. So, okay, so we've got a question bank and we got our topics. And sometimes it'll be a great question that selects the topic. And sometimes there'll just be like some amazing topic that we need to cover. Like our first episode of this new, our sixth season is coming up this in a couple of weeks. And the first episode is going to be about a guy who spent a year collecting and cataloging his own poop. And that wasn't driven by a kid question. There probably won't be a kid question on that episode, but it's really, it's going to be a good one. I don't know what we're going to call it, but it's going to be good.
We'll have to stay tuned for that one.
Yeah.
And I do want to say, even though it sounds like it was in your early days that you would go into schools, you can still connect with teachers. There's a little button that says that teachers can Skype with you guys should they want to invite you to their classrooms. This is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, which we've done, and it is awesome. I mean, I don't know. I love hanging out with kids. Since I was 23, I've been not in a classroom for 2 school years, and this is the second one coming up that I'm not going to be in the classroom. So I'd be eager to get back in as much as possible, but not having to do lesson plans.
I interrupted your process.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
Oh, sure. Okay. So back to the process. And once we have a topic, I mean, usually I actually don't get involved in these stages because Lindsay pretty much drives all of the content. So she'll do the interview and get the interview and cut it down and then write a script. And then once the script is written, that's usually when I come in and I try to stay ignorant as much as possible about what she's learned in the interview so that my reactions can be reasonably authentic. Mm-hmm. as though I'm actually hearing the thing for the first time, because I am. And then we'll record the script, and sometimes there's a certain amount of room for ad-libbing, and like sometimes Lindsay will just write in, like, say something funny here, and then...
Which you definitely do. I feel like you take every opportunity to throw a pun in there. I was laughing a few times throughout the the volcano episode, most recent.
That's my job. That's my job. I get to be the goofus, which is, you know, it really works for my personality and temperament and, you know, the kind of teacher I was / maybe in the future. Let's see. So then once we record, then Lindsay makes the rough cut, which is, you know, just an edit of the show. And then she passes it to me and I add all the scoring. Typically, like in a typical 15-minute episode, that's about our normal length. There'll be around 6 pieces of music per episode. And usually I try to do... kind of an A theme and a B theme. So like the A theme comes in for maybe the first two musical sections, and then the B theme comes in, and then typically if I'm doing it well, then it's A/B for the final thing that brings everything home. So then And once that's taken care of, and once it's all scored, then we give it a final listen and make sure all the levels are right and everything's all mastered, and then send it out into the world.
So much detail, so much passion goes into it. It's so very clear. And I love the note about being able to incorporate, of course, authentic student questions, and that drives a lot of the decision-making. Which really just goes to show how this is ever evolving, right? You're choosing current events to discuss, topics that are interesting, maybe even your own family's questioning, right? You're using your daily life even to incorporate some of maybe the questions that your own children have. And I love also for those that are listening, thinking, how might I be able to get involved and to incorporate my classroom, maybe not necessarily in a Skype format or Zoom or whatever it might be, but the actual questions. That link is right on the website, as Danielle mentioned. So that's hugely helpful. And I think would continue this conversation even further, because I know that, you know, I'm just thinking about my own students as high schoolers, even being interested in something like this. So I can only imagine elementary work through seventh graders.
Hold on, Nicole, are you interested in this? Because maybe there are episodes that have been translated into another language.
That was my very nice question. Asking this?
Yeah.
Marshall, so you've discussed life science, music, earth and space science, and now you've gone a step further and you have translated your top episodes to Tumblr in Espanol. And I love to see it. That is just such an exciting pivot. So what was the impetus behind that? And can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, sure. So to be clear, I was not involved in that at all. Besides friend making, really. So Lindsay, when we moved to Barcelona, we befriended another couple who the wife is a journalist and the husband is another musician. So, you know, we were very well matched. And they had recently moved here, I think. This is Alvaro and Nuria, who are the hosts of Tumble in Espanol. But they came from Miami. But they were both born in Spain. She might have been born in Puerto Rico, but it doesn't matter. They're both Spanish speaking. And so last March, we did an episode called Answering Kids Coronavirus Questions,
right.
Which, I mean, this was like a week after the lockdown. We were like, okay, mm-hmm. We should do something about this. So we did that, and that episode actually really blew up in a major way. I think, you know, of all of the things I'm most proud of is that I need to mention it's also like after 10 o'clock here, so my name memory is going away. The woman from The Good Place, Eleanor Shellstrop.
Kristen Bell.
Thank
Kristen
you.
Bell. Yeah, Kristen Bell actually shared that episode on her Instagram.
Wow.
And yeah, and so it was just like, oh my God, Eleanor Shellstrop's heard my voice.
Goals.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that episode, it really blew up in a major way. And like a week or two later, Nuria recorded a version of it in Spanish that she'd translated herself, just, you know, completely on a lark for no, you know, no good reason than she thought it was important and she thought she could do it. And I mean, she did an amazing job with that. And then we did another virus related episode that she translated into Spanish immediately. And then we started talking to people about funding a Spanish translation of Tumble overall. So Himalaya got involved and they funded those first six episodes. And then if they're reasonably successful, then there will be more.
And that may be a nice transition into sort of the next kind of chapter, or I should say, really what goes hand in hand with creating any great content is all of the behind the scenes stuff in the business and what it takes to actually make that tick. And speaking of the content that you put out that was, would you say was sponsored by Himalaya, or that was the new platform for it? I'm not familiar with Himalaya personally, so I'm
curious. Yeah, well, so Himalaya is a podcatcher. They were doing a big push this spring and summer in developing some original content, which I think is a direction that a lot of the podcast world is going. Kind of like Netflix. They want to have the things that are, you can only get them on Stitcher, you can only get them on Spotify. So Himalaya was doing a big push and they were wanting to develop stuff, and we'd gotten connected to them through someone who worked there who was a big fan of ours. And when we were talking, we started talking about the pod course, which I imagine we'll discuss at some point, because Himalaya was wanting to launch their learning platform, and hand in hand with that, they needed to have a lot of content. So in the midst of our pod course discussions, we also mentioned, like, by the way, we also are translating stuff into Spanish, and they have a presence in Latin America and also in, you know, just the Spanish speaking market in the United States is large. So they were interested in pursuing that and funding it in exchange for a kind of exclusive distribution for a certain period of time. Hopefully they'll fund it more, we'll see. Personally, I'm just super excited to see it out there in the world. I think it's really, I don't know, there's something so cool about having someone else be you in another language. So I think I'll, yeah, it's like, I have a Spanish me now. His name is Alvaro. And he says things like, hay muchísima caca aquí. It's great.
Well, thank you for explaining the Himalaya connection. Now I understand more clearly. And that's just one of, I'm sure, many examples of the ways that you're adapting with the times. And another great example of that, and you're one of the first people we've ever had the opportunity to speak with about this, is using the platform Patreon.
Yeah.
We'd love to talk about, you know, for our listeners who are new to maybe edupreneurship in general, or are looking for different ways of how to pivot maybe their own podcast or their YouTube channel. You know, we're just always looking to learn more.
Sure. Yeah. So we started a Patreon, gosh, I think it's been running for 3 or 4 years, and kind of just like our audience, the growth was pretty organic for the most part at the beginning. And then at around like a certain level, we started to hit a plateau. And at that time, we kind of sort of went back to the drawing board and started thinking about some of the key elements, which, you know, they tell you when you create a Patreon, the key is what are you offering as a reward for your patrons? Mm. And I honestly don't remember what we were offering at the very beginning. I think it was maybe ad-free, and then I think we offered like a big bundle, like you get a handwritten note from us at a certain level, mm-hmm. or all this stuff. And around the time that we were plateauing, I just decided that we'd go and ask our patrons, like, what are you doing here? why are you giving us money? And I think, you know, the answer is always that primarily they're doing it because they want to support what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, the main reason for most of our patrons. But something I learned from that is that the things that they really wanted were birthday shout outs, which I think we were doing that to some extent. Like, I think we were doing the typical thing you do with Patreon where you're like, thanks to these new patrons, Jim, Bob, da, 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 da. And then, like, occasionally when people would sign up, they'd be like, by the way, it's Ben's birthday tomorrow. I'd be like, okay, John, Jim, Ben, and Ben, happy birthday, da, 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 you know. Mm-hmm. And then I learned from asking our patrons that that was what they really cared about more than anything else. The second most important thing they wanted was maybe audio extras and then some looks behind the scenes. So, like, us telling them, you know, what we're having for breakfast, I don't know. But really far and away, the thing our patrons value the most is hearing their kid's name and a happy birthday message. And when we started doing that, then, you know, it started growing again. And yeah, I mean, that was the thing. And I honestly wouldn't have guessed that that was the most important thing. I would have thought, like, maybe a t-shirt or a lunch bag or socks, you know. But it's really just that, like, Ben hearing happy birthday from me on his favorite podcast, and that makes his day.
That's wild and makes so much sense based on who your audience is, right? The parents are the ones who are funding the Patreon because they know it is going to make Ben's day because he listens to this podcast all the time.
You're the Bruce Einstein of the science community. Kids are there to hear the birthday shout out. They need it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And with that in mind, with the Patreon and how you've sort of, you know, narrowed in on what kids and what families are looking for, can you just give us just a kind of a sneak peek into, first of all, the decision-making into starting your newest course and what families and kids can expect from that? And was there a connection from what you learned about from your Patreon, from your Patreons into creating the course?
I think those really didn't have much to do with each other. You know, when we were talking to Himalaya, they're building this Himalaya learning platform, which they kind of want to create like masterclass, but it's audio only.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they're mostly envisioning continuing education and adult education.
I guess
primarily
appeal to them because I'm sure there are plenty of parents that love this because it's screen free.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, what we were trying to do was create something that's screen free, that is immersive, and that a kid can do by themselves without assistance from an adult.
Yeah.
I mean, those were sort of our main things, and, you know, have it be engaging and fun and NGSS aligned as well was another major goal I had in going into it. So I ended up, this one I wrote more of myself. I basically just planned it as you would a unit, you know, where you've got 10 lessons, each mini lesson's gonna be 15 minutes long, and here's my goal, here's my objective at the end of what I want the kids to get out of it. Here's how they're gonna show me that they've gotten what I want them to get out of it. And then kind of plan backwards from there. So in episode 10 is going to be all about this. Let's see if we can go all the way back to what episode 1 is going to be. And we based the whole thing off of our episode about the work of a guy named Rob Dunn, who's a scientist in North Carolina, who'd done a study of all the wildlife of homes. So basically, he and his team went into a bunch of different houses in North Carolina and just did a big survey of every living creature they could find in there or evidence of or anything like that. And then he ended up expanding it to a global project and then turned it into a citizen science project that even kids can participate in.
so cool. Like, if you look at this page, I am so excited for my son to be old enough to share this with him. And I feel like he's going to want to tell me a bunch of things that'll really gross me out based on his writing.
Yeah.
It's perfect. It's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, yeah, there's like one of the episodes we have them go into the bathroom and they have the, well, I included some instructions to build a DIY microscope using just a phone and a lens from a $3 laser pointer. And then they can use that to look into the gunk that's in a drain and maybe find some drain fly larvae.
Ew. But yeah.
Yes. Ew, but it made like little microscopic little worm things that are chowing down on biofilms.
And I, you know, the thing that I keep repeating to myself is what is right on your manifesto, which I love. It is just front and center. If kids understand how science works, the future will be a better place, and let's make more podcasts for kids. And I feel like that's the perfect place to end this, because there's so much more to learn about you. There's so much more to be educated on, especially as you continue to kind of knock down these barriers that, you know, I have experienced working with high schoolers, and I know Danielle has her own experiences in the high school classroom and being a mom. So there's just a lot that we're all uncovering together. And we just so appreciate that you've shared so much with us today. And we want to make sure we have a chance to shout out where people can continue to follow along with you and connect with you.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. You can find Tumble, I mean, anywhere you get podcasts, first of all, but also our website is sciencepodcastforkids.com. You can find the pod course on himalaya.com/tumble. And I believe that's about it.
We will have the links to all of that in the show notes, because we know teachers and parents are going to want to get their hands on that and get connected with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, you know, for any teacher who wants to use the pod course in their classroom and have their kids do it together, they should probably email through our website, sciencepodcastforkids.com. And we can get them hooked up with, you know, just the classroom account for that course. So it's pretty much designed for individual use, but we can kind of manipulate the back end to get a school account.
That's so awesome. Thank you for that. I'm sure we will have people taking you up on it.
I hope so. I look forward to the emails.
If you'd like to learn more about us and the services that we offer, head to everything.com.